I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
It's Thanksgiving. It's another Pedestrian Podcast episode. This week, myself, Stuart Court, is again with Ross out somewhere. He's gone AWOL, I think, Adam. I'm joined by Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good. I wonder if Ross has had like a second concussion of the year, so we've got to be like extra cautious before bringing him back into practice and stuff like that.
Yeah. The protocol is very detailed.
Yeah, it's very. I mean, I'm all for being careful with this stuff, but you know, we've seen this is very cautious about someone. Yeah, maybe not even a star player. Who knows?
No, that's what the Pro Bowl voting is open. So maybe we'll see if Ross emerges in that.
Who's more likely to get it, Ross Bell or Cassius Marsh?
At the minute, Ross Bell probably. Or no, probably maybe Cassius Marsh's agent. Maybe that's the one who deserves a lot of the credit.
Yeah, that's probably not a bad shout. Not a bad shout.
Right, see, yeah, I've kind of been waiting to record this episode since about 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning, Adam. The Seahawks against the Atlanta Falcons on Monday Night Football was a fun game, which was ruined by something that is somewhat unforgivable. Before we get into the fun part, there's been a lot of talk about Mr. Blair Walsh and his longest field goal of the season is 46 yards. It's not wasting time. It's unforgivable for an NFL kicker in 2017 to come up short from 51 yards, isn't it?
So we're straight in. We're straight in on Walsh, yeah?
I've waited 3 days. I'm not waiting.
Okay, right. So I've had a long time to formulate these thoughts, and this is where I am with that, right? Obvious, and I've just posted this in the group, but I'm going to re-say it for those that, you know, maybe, you know, need to listen as opposed to read. Obviously, in a team sport that has 53 players, a gazillion coaches, it is impossible for one person to be blamed for an entire team's defeat. That is, you shouldn't even need to say it because it's such an obvious point. However, that doesn't mean that you still can't pin the loss on someone. And we all know that many Seahawks players made mistakes and errors, and Pete Carroll dropped the ball a few times. However, the kicker's sole existence in the game is to bail your team out in situations like that and make last-minute field goals. The field goal kicker isn't there, really. Like, they're not paid the millions of dollars to kick the extra points and kick the field goals at 10-7 up in the second quarter. You pay all of that money, like an insurance policy, so that when you're in the last minute of the game, you need to win the game with a kick. Your kicker steps up and does it. And, you know, 60 yards, the Jake Elliott one for Philadelphia against Dallas a few weeks ago, whatever it was. That, or was it the Giants maybe? That's not a kick that you're expecting the guy to make. If he does it, it's a bonus. A 52-yard field goal in a situation like that, that is literally all Blair Walsh's salary, what it's been paid for him to make that kick. And he blew it. And I was just thinking now, you know, the two biggest team mantras are protect the team and always compete. And if you ask me, brutally honest, Blair Walsh is still being on the Seahawks, does neither of those two things, and I cannot believe he's still around.
Yeah, I mean, we said for weeks that it was a case of what happens when he misses one, when he misses two. Now he's missed four. And yes, I know he kicked field goals before, but that's, as I said, that's him doing his job. But when it come down to it, I mean, you watch his body language on that final drive, what, 40-second drive, we got down to 35. Of the Falcons, his confidence, his body language is abysmal. It's not his fault that we lost, because obviously put yourself in a 14-point hole after 7 minutes is not good against many teams, especially against the reigning NFC champs. But as you said, he was called on to do something and he didn't do it. It was his first field goal attempt from 50 or more yards in the season, and he come up short. His longest of the season was 46 yards, and he did that about an hour before he missed. I mean, a lot of people thought, how should you miss field goals last year? How should you miss field goals by going left and right? If you watch, he never, never, well, I can't remember one, left one so short. I mean, it didn't just like clip the post, it missed by 2 or 3 yards. And as you say, the fact that he's still a Seahawk as we rumble through Thanksgiving and towards the game against San Francisco at the weekend, it's just, it doesn't make it kind of, it makes sense in one point because they're protecting the player and all that, because it's very rare. We've seen Pete Carroll over the last 6-7 years just completely get rid of a player on 1 week's play, although maybe he did that yesterday. But the fact that he's still there, it's going to come down to a point. If the Seahawks make the playoffs, which is becoming ever unlikelier by the NFC game, it could be a harder call after whatever happens on the 3 Thanksgiving games later. If the Seahawks make the playoffs this year, they're going to have to play in a cold stadium on the road in January with wind, snow, and opposing fans baying for blood. If the Seahawks go to Philadelphia in January, or they go to, who else is in the, I mean, the Vikings is a dome team, the Rams is going to be in Los Angeles, but if it comes down to against Philadelphia in the NFC Championship game and it's a 50 yard field goal and it's 4th and 14, the Seahawks are probably going to go for it, and that's just absolutely ridiculous. And the point of only blaming one person, for everyone who doesn't want to blame Blair Walsh, where was all this defending a player when it comes to fire Bevel? That's one person who gets,
or Jimmy Graham,
or Jimmy Graham, I guess. So it fits for people to blame one person then, but when it's a kick out, which is arguably one of the more expendable positions on the team, as you can see with just how the, you know, I think the Jets on their 3rd kicker this year, and not the greatest offensive team to point as an example, but fire Bevel has existed for things which are out of his control. He doesn't ask the Seahawks left tackle to miss a sack off the snap. He doesn't ask Russell Wilson to throw it to somewhere where Tyler Lockett isn't. He doesn't design plays like that, but he always, always gets the blame. And people are more readily blaming him than they were the kicker, who is a lot more obvious. More obvious to pin the blame on. It just makes no sense why people are so quick to defend someone who's done so little. Blair Walsh, after that, is now in his career 24-35 of field goals 50 or plus yards. I mean, it's not like he's got a cast iron leg like J.K. like Matt Prater or most NFL kickers in the league. And he's just
Okay, you really were very pissed off about that then. The other thing I would say about it, and you know, it's hard to say this. It's not, you know, it's not the nicest thing to say, but I am a firm believer that certain things happen in sport that, from a mental point of view, it is impossible for you to get over it. I would say, unfortunately, the play in Super Bowl 49, as much as the Seahawks players can talk about it, you know, that doesn't affect us anymore or whatever. Wrong. It does. It affects a lot of what we do. We can't get near the 1 yard line without someone bringing it up. Like, it's just one of those things. Another one I would say, the Atlanta Falcons are never going to get over 28-3. They're just not going to do it. No. They might, well, they do. And you know, right now, even the game, you know, they had the game won on 3 occasions on Monday night, let's be honest. And they blew it because they are ultimately in the back of their head. Anytime they're up and the team starts to come back, they're 28-3 is all they're thinking. You know, Softy tweeted out on Monday, on the penultimate drive of the game, if we get the ball back, you know it, I know it, Dan Quinn knows it, the Seahawks are going to win. And to be honest, I thought, you know, barring a very, very good trip up of Russell Wilson, we had the game won. And Blair Walsh is unfortunately going to have that. The miss that he had against the Seahawks, that's never going to leave him. Like, it's stuck. And it sucks for him, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I think, as I said, his body language before that game, before that kick, was just not good. And the fact he basically admitted he wasn't really feeling it after, as you pointed out on Twitter, two, three weeks before, he was confident he was going to make a 63-yarder, what it was, against the Redskins, and was somewhat disappointed he didn't get the opportunity to do that. And it's not his fault. It just happens that the mental side of it has gone. It happens in most sports. It happens. I mean, the Ashes started yesterday, and we've seen that, especially last time England were in Australia, what the mental side of the game did to players who, before they landed in Australia, were amongst the best in that profession. So it happens. It's something that you can't really run into the ground much more than the Seahawks appear to be doing. I mean, San Francisco doesn't appear the friendliest place in terms of turf for a kicker to kick. And if we're here a week, this time next week, talking about the same thing, it's likely, and it's just unfathomable that they just don't seem to be able to see that his goose is cooked, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't get it, but there's obviously a reason for it. I don't know. I can't. I'm a bit of a loss for words for it all. I don't really know. I don't really get what's going on here and why this is still going on.
Yeah.
They obviously have a reason for it, but I find it fairly unfathomable, I have to say.
And about 6 inches from the goal line, two backs in the backfield. Now Vanette comes out and wings on the right side. Russell's going to roll right. He can't take it in, and he does! Touchdown, Seahawks! I'm looking out to the far side, and there's not a soul out there, and I was just saying, Russell, take it upfield and score, baby, and he does!
10. Again from the shotgun, three receivers, free play coming. Russell's going to throw down the seam! Touchdown, Seahawks! Doug Baldwin! A flag is down far side, going to be offside, I believe, against the Falcons.
Offside.
It is.
That penalty's declined.
Shades of San Francisco, 4 years ago, free play. Russell throws a dart
from his own 22. Matt Ryan will go out of the shotgun. He's got a tight slot to the near side. Coleman in the backfield. Here comes the rush. Ryan steps up. Ryan gets hit. He goes down. Shelton Richardson gets there for the sack.
Very, very strange. But anyway, back. That's all cordoned off for another week until he does it all again on Sunday, most likely. But the Seahawks offense were pretty, really find a groove yet again on Monday night against what is a pretty aggressive defense, especially when they have a lead. Although, as Adam points out, it possibly is a mentally weak one after what happened in the Super Bowl. Russell Wilson, though, 26 for 42, 258 yards, two touchdowns, one interception, and he was sacked three times. He also ran and really was our only running threat. Seven attempts for 86 yards, but that interception is a bad one, isn't it?
Weird. I mean, he's normally like that crossing route is normally sort of meat and drink for him, and I just can't believe he missed Lockett so far behind. I've never seen. That's probably one of his worst throws in a crossing route that I can remember. And, you know, we're coming out to about like five or six pretty bad interceptions in his last three home games, which he's been playing, you know, otherworldly football. Like, he's been quite incredible. Maybe, you know, in being riskier, that's what causes the picks. But they've been uncommon mistakes for him to make. It's probably how I'd call it.
Yeah, that's one of the worst ones I can remember. He bulleted at him behind him, and he didn't. And Lockett wasn't ready for it. I mean, Lockett was open as well. He just needed a little bit of a floater, which obviously we've seen him struggle with in the last few weeks. But he just needed a floater. Lockett had 20 plus yak, but and then obviously the next drive, he fumbled the ball when he didn't see. Well, he didn't expect Jermaine Ifedi to be beaten so quickly, which is another thing, which is quite strange at this point. and then it was 14-0 hole. But once they're in that hole, Russell Wilson really was the offense on Monday night, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he accounted for 90 something percent of the yards that we accumulated.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, the record for the NFL is 81.8%.
Yeah.
So obviously that would be a quarterback's passing yards plus his rushing yards would accumulate that. And I think he came into the game on 82.1%. So already on a record, and then he put in a game like that. So he has to be in consideration for MVP awards, although obviously the wins and losses are something that's very important for that.
Yeah.
And in the same way as David Johnson, I would say, was quite clearly the offensive MVP of the league last year. He was nowhere, maybe even the league MVP, because the Cardinals didn't win anything. He was never anything close to that. So Wilson maybe is looking at maybe an offensive player of the year because he's playing out of his mind, and he has the team squarely and solely on his back.
Yeah, I think he's second in passing yards behind Tom Brady, and I think he's third in passing touchdowns or something. I might be wrong on that. But he's definitely second on yards. But outside of that, Russell Wilson, 86 yards on the ground. There wasn't a lot, but last week in the WhatsApp conversation with Grant, who was on the pod last week, I somewhat ambitiously set Eddie Lacy's over under at 8. and he somehow managed to fall quite a way under that, with just 2 yards on 3 carries. But the more surprising part of that is just 3 carries with Thomas Rawls a healthy scratch and Mike Davis injured in the early part of the second half. It's just another example of not too sure what they're doing still with him on the roster, Adam.
Yeah, I find it all very confusing how they're treating the running back position. I mean, we said last week, you know, are they going to run it for the sake of running it, or are they running it in order to open up the run? I just think the whole thing is just broken. But at this stage, almost like last, are we going to be better off by keep doing it, or is it just time just to can it and just say, this is the end of the run game, we'll get what we can get, we'll run the play action with Wilson wherever possible, maybe, you know, you just mix up, or you give all the carries to Rawls because he's probably the most likely to do something from an explosive point of view, because this team needs to do a lot to win the rest of their games. They have to find 4 wins, and there's only 2 winnable games on that schedule, easily winnable games on that schedule, I would say. So the run game, you know, it's a shame because for the third year...
Yeah, it is unfathomable. There's someone who put on Twitter on Monday, Anthony Amico, said, instead of handing the ball to Lacey, they should just tell the sideline judge to change the down marker. because that's what it's coming to. I mean, he had 2 yards on 3 carries. His longest was 2 yards, which means he had 2 carries of 0. This just makes no sense. But also the running game... before we get to the one who was inactive, Mike Davis had 6 carries, 18 yards, and 2 catches on 2 targets for 41. He wasn't game breaking on the ground, but he showed something. He showed the spark. He provided the spark, didn't he? Until he got injured.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit annoying. I mean, the second or third time this year that a running back sort of looked decent and pulled up with a groin injury, which is really very frustrating.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it'd be really nice if we could cut that out, because it's getting in the way of, if we are trying to open up some holes, it's sort of getting in the way of what we're trying to do. So hopefully that he can be back for Sunday, because it sounded like he had a much, much better performance. I didn't actually manage to see the whole game because of a trip to Dortmund on Tuesday for the mighty Spurs. so I missed, I've watched condensed, but you never really get as good an indication of the game. But, they're asking, you know, I described him as Troymaine Davis because last year Troymaine Pope was seen as the great white hope for the running game. So whether it's going to be the same as that, I don't know. But if they can just find someone or something, it would just be such a boost.
Yeah. JD McKissick for the running backs did lead the way with 7 carries for 30 yards and 5 catches for 23. He also had about 50 snaps, which, as we said a few weeks ago, is not his forte. You can't really lean on McKissick to be like every down guy, but that's what we did on Sunday. And obviously a lot of talk, Tom Cable saying yesterday that he just needs to calm down and not put so much pressure on himself. Thomas Rawls was a healthy scratch. We said a couple of weeks ago on the pod that him and Lockett may have mental barriers to break down. Thomas Rawls is doing him a disservice at this point, isn't it?
Well, I did quite enjoy Tom Cable telling someone not to try so hard. Presumably he says that in all of his offensive line meetings to the majority of his players. So I did find that quite ironic. In fairness, we did say that Rawls does need to show a bit more patience. But, you know, he was a guy that, you know, when they open up some holes for him, you don't want him to be calmed down at all. You want him to absolutely blast through it like he was in 2015.
Yeah.
So a little bit rich coming from Mr. Cable, I would suggest there.
Yeah, but it has some validity to it, I think, as well. I think, as we've said, he just seems to have like a mental cap on him. And Thomas Rawls said yesterday that he 100% trusts who he is. And the passing game, obviously, 26 completions and 42 attempts, 11 targets on Monday, went to the guy who isn't used enough or used right, Adam. Jimmy Graham, 7 catches on 11 targets, 58 yards. And another touchdown, which tied him for the franchise record for tight end touchdowns with Jeremy Stephens at 15. He's going quite some way, as we say every week at this point, to making all the last couple of years seem a bit weird and foolish, Adam.
Very strange. He is now a guy that, you know, is basically must re-sign for next year. I think. I don't think we're going to be able to rebuild the running game, and you know, get in another receiver and replace probably 10 touchdowns from the tight end position in the draft next year in free agency, considering the lack of cap space.
Yeah.
I just don't see that as a possibility. And it's cool to see him being leaned on as a guy who Wilson can trust. And I guess you, in for one sense, you're saying, where the hell has this been for the last 2.5 years? But you know, at least we said a few weeks ago, if you want to trade him, fine. If you want to cut him, fine. But at least don't do us the disservice of not trying everything to get him going. Yeah. So fair play to them, because they seem to have done that, and it is making a huge difference. And you know, his touchdowns against the Rams, the Texans, the Cardinals, you know, there's three wins there that have come from Jimmy Graham touchdowns.
Yeah.
So you know, we've needed him.
Yeah, and on Monday, nearly a fourth. But the thing with Jimmy Graham and Russell Wilson, this is arguably the longest period they've had where they've both been healthy. Obviously, his first year in Seattle was cut short about this time, wasn't it? Week 11, week 12, Jimmy Graham got injured?
Yes, I think that's about right.
And then last year, obviously, Russell Wilson was barely functioning with sprained ankles and sprained knees and the rest of it, and a banged-up shoulder, apparently. So, I mean, this really is the time to judge when they're both healthy, both playing at a pretty high level, and it's coming up golden for the Seahawks. Elsewhere on the receivers, Paul Richardson had 5 receptions and 56 yards. Doug Baldwin had just 2 catches, 40 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Lockett, 4 catches and 37 yards, but with Lockett, 97 yards in the return game. And it was, I mean, me and Will on our group chat kept pointing out, it was one block. I think
Wilson, wasn't it?
Jordan Roos had one. It wasn't anything extravagant. It was just one block every single. If you go back and watch the big returns he had, it was just down to one player doing his job, and Tyler Lockett broke it for an extra 30, 40 yards. But that's what we've been waiting to see from Lockett, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not a minute too soon. He still doesn't look he's got quite the zip that we were hoping he'd have. But, you know, Luke Wilson said that he really challenged the special teams to make some plays. And it was great to see them do it. Yeah. Really good. Because, you know, we need to play pretty much perfect ball from now to the end of the year if we're going to have any chance of making the playoffs, let alone going further. And special teams is an important part of that. Like, we have to get it going.
Yeah, 100%. It's all three phases have to be functioning, and at last 2 of the 3 on Monday appear to be of offensive line. The biggest thing for me, I think you may have pointed out as well, Adam, is the fact that Dwayne Brown actually played through what it had to be still be an ankle sprain, and the fact that he played bodes well for that unit for the rest of the season, even with Ode Ibushi suffering dislocated shoulder. The fact that Dwayne Brown is going to be there and willing to play through what he probably played through on Monday is a massive plus for this team over the next couple of months, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest Luke Jokel fan in the world, but he's certainly been an upgrade on what we've had at left guard for the last couple of years. So if he does come back healthy on Sunday, as is expected, you know, maybe the run game can get going, because they've got the left side. They can run behind Justin Britt, Luke Jokel and Dwayne Brown. You know, having good players is certainly not, you know, not going to hurt this run game.
No.
So, you know, with a bit of luck, that's what will help sort of ignite it. You know, we always look pretty good with the play action and passing off to the right. Maybe it's, you know, pass right, run left is going to be the way that we do things, as simple as that sounds.
Yeah, if Luke Jokel does play on Sunday, the Seahawks front five is likely going to be Dwayne Brown, Luke Jokel, Justin Britt, Ethan Posich, and Jermaine Ifedi, which means that the Seahawks front five, a unit which doesn't get much investment, will have 2 first rounders and 3 second rounders, I believe. So that's another cliche worn to the ground and disproven over the last few weeks. But on offense, who was the one to praise? It's probably going to be Wilson, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he was just phenomenal. He's just picked the whole team up and been the leader that we needed him to be. And again, if we're going to go to where we want to be this year, you know, I hate to say it, but it's on him.
Yeah, and Christian, I think I said to you that if the Seahawks, you mentioned MVP earlier, if the Seahawks make the playoffs, if they win the division especially, then he has to be MVP, because it would be because of him. There's, I mean, if Eddie Lacy's is Eddie Lacy at this point. You can't really rely much on Jamie McKissick. It's going to be some turnaround for Thomas Rawls to do much. Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham are going to be probably 1A and 1B to Russell Wilson, because they're going to be probably swallowing up most of the targets over the next couple of months. But, I mean, if Eddie Lacy runs for 200 yards on Sunday, Russell Wilson still leads the team in rushing. It's just absolutely remarkable how much this team relies on him. It's possibly been coming, but as you said, the 90% of yards he got on Monday compared to what he's, along with what he's done over the first 3 months of the season, if the team wins the NFC West, the Russell Wilson should be the NFL MVP. Moving on to the defensive side, it was the first time in 4 years against Matt Ryan and the Atlanta Falcons that they kept Matt Ryan under 200 yards passing, but it's like a weird purgatory with the defense at the minute, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd be brutally honest, I don't think I saw the game closely enough to really focus on who was that great and who was that poor on defense. One thing I would say was that it does concern me slightly that Jeremy Lain and Justin Coleman, when they're outside, their coverage is just, they just constantly make plays on the ball. I don't know what it just, there's a few catches that people have made. I mean, Julio's made a couple of circus catches, but our guys sort of look right there and just sort of miss it. So I'm a little bit worried if Shaq Griffin's not going to be able to go on Sunday, that, you know, on the outside, we're very, very susceptible. But yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I thought we were going to get hammered in the game. And I guess within reason, you could say we were always fairly behind in the game. But for the defense to hold Matt Ryan to less than 200 yards, to only give up 34 points when 14 are basically given to Atlanta, that's pretty impressive. And I didn't think they had it in them to do that. And it's actually given me a little bit more hope for, you know, further down the road when you have to beat teams like Dallas, like the Rams, you know, and find two wins from somewhere, that maybe the system in place is good enough to alleviate the issues caused by injury.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons were kept, not just the quarterback kept under 200 yards, the offense was kept under 300 total yards, which obviously 34 points and under 300 yards is strange, but when they had the field for the 35 yards after the interception, and then scored on a fumble recovery, that's 14 points, as you say, so that explains that. They only had 89 yards on the ground without Devontae Freeman on 30 carries. It was quite a gnarly Seahawks. It was, for me, the definition of, even though they give up the points, almost bend but don't break. I mean, Julio Jones, two circus, just a cheat code. Julio Jones, it's just not even fair. I mean, the catch along the sideline, there's no way any other receiver can be expected to make that, but there we are. It was quite a gnarly defensive performance. Bobby Wagner was Bobby Wagner. KJ Wright had a decent game, although yet again, the tight end, it probably wasn't his responsibility, but a no-name tight end gets a long touchdown against us. It's really strange and really annoying how often that happens, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what it is about that. It's just obviously a very soft zone for some reason. I don't really get why and how it's not been solved, but there's obviously a reason for it. You know, what you don't need is people like Hardy making one-handed catches in the end zone. Like, it's just frustrating when that happens, when you really need, you know, a bit of luck to fall your way. But yeah, we didn't get it.
No, yeah, and also with Jeremy Lain, he was, for a very brief time during the first half, benched for a few plays in lieu of Nico Thorpe, who then made a pretty nice pass breakup on third down as well, which just, Jeremy Lain is verging towards Eddie Lacy territory, it appears, because he just doesn't seem to be able to keep his job for an entire game. But Shaq Griffin concussed really early on in the first, I think it was the second Falcons, the first proper Falcons drive, Shaquille Griffin went out with a concussion. It appears that he's going to miss this Sunday, and he's currently the third top rated rookie cornerback in the league behind Marshawn Lattimore, and I think it's Tre'Davious White at Buffalo. It's weird to say, but missing a rookie cornerback is going to be a big deal on Sunday, even against the Niners, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to miss three out of your four, you know, first team base defense in the secondary, which is just, you know, it's not good. And I was going to save this for Lock and Shock, but if I was a Arizona Cardinals fan or a Rams fan, you know, for the works, you know, had the six fingers called Cletus, stuff like that. If I was one of those people, That joke didn't work out particularly well, which is a shame. I you know, if I was doing the Arizona Cardinals podcast, and they did Lock and Shock, I might have the 49ers down there to win on Sunday as my shock of the week. I don't think it's going to happen, but it wouldn't stun me if we found Sunday a particularly hard one to get over.
Yeah, because they definitely, I mean, on bye last week, they definitely seem to find a bit of a groove with CJ Beathard. I think the trade for Jimmy Garoppolo is litter. Proverbial fire and the rookie, similar to what they did with Alex Smith when they drafted Colin Kaepernick, although that ended as everyone expected with Kaepernick leading that team. But yeah, it's going to be a tough game on the road after what has happened the last couple of weeks, but because the defense is just ravaged. Tedrick Thompson was making plays on Sunday. Bradley McDougal is really, really holding down the fort in a much better fashion than what Stephen Terrell and Kelsey McCray did last year. So, and Byron Maxwell came in off the street on 2 days' practice and looked like Byron Maxwell of the first time round, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was one of those signings when a lot of people said, that seems a little bit of a weird one. But then when you actually look at it, you know, he knows the scheme, he knows the guys. He's clearly a pretty popular guy based on the reaction. Yeah. A lot of guys when he came back, and you know, I'm firmly of the view that he should never have left in the first place, albeit, you know, as a cornerback, I guess you do have to go and look for the money because you're always very replaceable, and so your career isn't always the longest, but I'm pleased to have him back, and you know, especially with the injuries we've got now, I'm just happy to have any guys in that room.
Yeah, most definitely. I think I said last week that how the secondary looks without Sherman and Chancellor and all the injuries is going to say a lot for the coaching, especially Pete Carroll and Chris Richard. And the first challenge, apart from two circus catches and then Mohamed Sanu bullying on a couple of plays, it wasn't a bad first outing. But Chris Richard, I mean, there's a lot. We'll get into something which happened yesterday for the Seahawks, but there's a lot of eyes on the Seahawks defensive coordinator when it's been good and isn't. You've posted a few times that Chris Richard isn't quite living up to those who come before him, Adam.
I just think that there's quite a lot of traits in the Seattle defense over the last few years that aren't necessarily the most welcome. Yeah. And I just wonder how much of that you pin on Carroll, because ultimately it is his defense, yeah, and you know the other guys work around him, or if you put it on Richard, but whoever it is, you know, things like the tight ends up the seam, playing conservative in the fourth quarter with a lead on the last drive, you know, stuff like this happens a lot. I mean, not getting much pressure on the quarterback despite having a pretty incredible on paper front seven. There's a lot of stuff that the Seahawks defense don't seem to do quite as well as you'd hope them to do or expect them to do. And it happens, more than just once or twice. So it almost becomes a trend. And maybe it's just me being a bit harsh, but I wonder how much of that is on the coordinators or that's just the scheme they want to play.
Yeah, it is. I think after Dan Quinn and after what he's done, especially with the Falcons, I think the eyes on Chris Richard are probably a bit more intense than they were on Bradley and Quinn. So I think he's kind of been given a tough hand after trying to follow Dan Quinn. But yeah, there is a few, as you say, the tight end thing is just the weirdest thing. Levine Toilolo has three touchdowns against us in the last 2 years. It's just bizarre. But yeah, on the defensive side, one to praise, Adam?
I'm going to defer to you on this one because I just haven't seen it closely enough to say.
I'm going to give it to Nazir Jones, who, with extended work with Jerron Reed out, who appears to be back this week at least, he's really, really, really stepping up with extended work, and he's looking like a pretty close to a draft steal. I mean, he's another guy from that third or fourth round haul that they had in the draft back in April. He's, along with Griffin, really the guy who's stepping up more prominently at occasions, especially as a run defender, but also as a pass rusher as well. Talking of pass rush, the team have made some moves since the game on Monday. It was a surprising one coming with the release of 37-year-old future Hall of Fame defensive end pass rusher Dwight Freeney. Now, when it first came down, it was a bit of, shock, but looking at it and seeing how people like Nazir Jones are stepping up, and Deion Jordan especially, who had a few flash plays that got the attention of John Gruden on Monday, it's not as... It makes more sense than it did initially, but it's still quite a strange way to treat someone who had 3 sacks in 2 games, Adam.
Yeah, I'm not hugely happy with this. I mean, for a few reasons. One, I think that there's guys like that who can be completely invaluable to a locker room, especially when a team's going through a period of adversity.
Yeah.
The other one is, from when you listen to Freeney and how he spoke about when he joined the Seahawks and, you know, how he was talking to other teams and whatever, he seemed to put quite a lot into the decision to join the Seahawks, and it seemed like a very good fit. And I just seem slightly uneasy about putting a guy like that on the waiver wire just for anyone to pick up. You know, he could have ended up in Cleveland or something, and, you know, let's be honest, that's not really the way you should treat a 37-year-old future Hall of Famer, albeit there, you know, knowing there is no room for sentiment in the NFL. I mean, the team seems to have made a saving of about $100,000 on the cap, and, you know, when they have so little money available, that isn't an insignificant amount of money. But overall, I found it quite a strange thing, and one that didn't sit that well with me.
Yeah, I think in a league where it's what have you done for me lately, the fact that Dwight Freeney's not on the team, when he didn't do a lot on Monday, he seemed more than a step slow on Monday, chasing the ball and chasing the passer. But the fact that he's not on the team for not getting a sack and Blair Walsh is still on his team is a weird correlation. But yeah, it's very strange. I mean, when I saw that he'd been released, I kind of expected to see a retirement tweet from him. But the fact that he actually went on waivers and now in Detroit reunited with Jim Caldwell, and who play in about 20 minutes as we record, it's a weird way, but a weird way to treat someone like that. But it's kind of you kind of trust at this point that people like that they think that people like Deion Jordan and Marcus Smith and Nazir Jones are going to continue to step up, and then people like Jaron Reed are going to be back sooner rather than later. Then the whole group will look different without the Hall of Famer. But yeah, it's a very strange way to handle it. I mean, he spent a month and he had 3 sacks, which on this almost at the same time, Cassius Marsh was cut by the New England Patriots, and obviously everyone wanted Cassius Marsh back in the Seahawks uniform. He's actually going to be on the opposite sideline of Sunday as the 49ers picks him up. But Cassius Marsh had 3 sacks in 3 years as Seahawk, and Dwight Freeney matched that in 4 games. So the Cassius Marsh thing, as we know, with Ross, is love affair with him. Let's just put it that way. It's just a weird one, isn't it? The Cassius Marsh might not be very good, lads.
Three wide outs to the left side. All receivers out. Russell Wilson. On the move, throws into the end zone. Touchdown! Paul Richardson.
Yeah, moving on. The Seahawks, on Thanksgiving weekend, rolled down the West Coast, down to the Bay Area, to face the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers are coming off a bye, but before that, they got their first win of the season with Marquise Goodwin, taking a lot of the headlines with all the personal tragedy he went through before contributing to that win. And as we said a couple of minutes ago, this is going to be a tougher out than it may seem on paper, Adam.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised that CJ Beathard is the quarterback going into the game and not Jimmy Garoppolo. Otherwise, I'm not quite sure why the Niners were so keen to give up a second-round pick for Garoppolo. Pardon?
Very strange.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird situation. I would imagine that they think he gives them a better chance to win, which says probably a lot about both the quarterbacks at the minute. But Shanahan, as an offensive mind, is someone that always gives me fits. And I thought the 49ers played pretty well in Seattle. I think in general they played pretty well this year, just without having the raw playmaking ability to get over the line in a lot of games. But, you know, if we sort of fall down to their level, it is on grass, which we're never quite as good at playing on. At least, you know, I presume it's a 1:30 kick, so that, you know, the time isn't too much of an issue. But I don't think it's going to be a particularly easy game, largely because we just aren't the full Seattle Seahawks that we know and love.
No, it's still, I mean, we said it when they were answered a few questions about the Seahawks defense, they didn't really answer all of them. So there's still questions on the defensive side. As I said, it's somewhat of a purgatory that the defense seems to be in at the minute with all the injuries ravaging it. And obviously with the moves like putting Dwight Freeney kind of adds to that as well. But yet again, it's just another example of it being on the offense. You'd expect, as will come more to fruition with the rest of the road games this season for the Seahawks, it's going to come down to what the offense does, what Russell Wilson does, and if he doesn't make any mistakes, the Seahawks are going to win this. But as he's shown with Monday and over the course of what has been a pretty good season, the mistakes are there more with the more responsibility, aren't they?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it doesn't help that you mentioned this, and I think it's quite an astute point. Doug Baldwin is probably playing through an injury that's going to make him have surgery as soon as the season's finished. And, you know, as you know, you don't, the last player we can afford to have injured in this team is Doug Baldwin. So, you really have to hope that's not going to be a sort of Sherman-esque type, ticking time bomb situation. I think it's his quad that's causing him problems.
If you watch him on Monday, especially if it's a touchdown catch, it takes him an age to get back up. And on his long run against the Cardinals, he gets whacked out of bounds. And as I said, he was dealing with tightness in his quad and thigh or something. He's not at 100%, nowhere near. And I think the first thing you're going to see once the season finishes is him on the operating table. But, sorry, Adam, cut you off. I'm just kind of expecting all those former Spurs players to come rolling out your mouth after the week.
Jose Dominguez and Nicola Berta will be up next. I think that I've completely forgotten my point, let's be honest. Something about the offense, something about the NFL, and I think about the Seattle Seahawks, but I'm not sure about the rest of it.
Obviously, talking about Doug Baldwin's injury, people are pointing to Darbo missed his walkthrough yesterday, but David Moore, the rookie, was he seventh round pick?
Yeah, something like that.
Seventh round pick from some made up college in Oklahoma, East Central Oklahoma. I don't know how it can be East and Central, but never mind. he was called up from the practice squad after apparently teams tried to sign him to their 53. Man, people are saying, oh, it's because Darbo. But as I said to you yesterday, I think no, this is a Doug Baldwin insurance policy. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and that doesn't give me an awful lot of extra confidence going into a game that I'm already fairly nervous about.
Exactly. Elsewhere on offense, the running game, it's just kind of a necessary evil at this point, isn't it?
I think just try and run behind Brown and Jokel and see what you can do. You know, the Niners' defensive front is no joke. Reuben Foster's playing every snap now, and is going to be a good player. So I guess it's do your best, Seahawks, which hopefully isn't also your worst.
But they have a pretty decent record at Levi Stadium. Had a bit of a scare Week 17 last year, which is a podcast I've listened back to, and it's just hilarious how
we were not happy
run down we are by that point last year. And it seems to be veering towards that this year as well. On the defensive side, this, even with all the injuries, this should be, if Earl Thomas plays and plays all game, obviously touch all the wood, and Michael Bennett, if the spine's there and the spine plays at a level we know they can play at, then offensively they're going to rely on a bit of momentum and getting into us early, aren't they? Niners?
Yeah, I mean, the Niners have been taking shots with Bethard quite a lot. So you'd have to hope that one slips out of his hand and it ends up in Earl Thomas's hands for a touchdown or something like that. They'll give us chances. So we just have to hope that we can turn one of them into points. It's about time the defense flipped the field for us with some turnovers, because we really need that.
We're just the one on Monday, but yeah, we need to find. I mean, the pure anxiety that the summer, Jeremy Lane especially, and shows when the ball comes anywhere near him is just, as you alluded to earlier, just very, very strange. One to look for, one to hope for on offense, Adam?
Paul Richardson. He's made some great catches and probably not had the number of touchdowns that he deserves this year. I reckon he's going to have a 2-touchdown game.
I'll probably agree with that. I would quite like to see Ty Lockett continue to do it all as he did on Monday to a certain extent. I think that would be something to watch. But I think if Doug Baldwin is legitimately hobbled and not at 100%, which obviously people say no one is at this stage of the NFL season. I think Lockett will need to continue to see that and to see him used. On the defensive side, though, Adam, for me, I think it's going to be without Shaquille Griffin, it's going to be the snap count and where they use Byron Maxwell.
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to use any of these guys. It's going to be fun to watch. As I say, hopefully, you know, there's not that much in the receiving core of the Niners to give you fits like the Falcons did. So maybe it'll be a bit more zone. I don't know. But either way, they've all got to step up because, it's still the NFL and you've still got to play to a level and earn the win. So hopefully they'll be in a position where they can do that. But, that's certainly going to be probably the position that wins or loses us the game on Sunday.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think also on Sunday, it's going to be a case that the Seahawks need snookers, don't they, at this point? Need help from New Orleans Saints, which is strange. When we're actually trying, we need help from a team which, if they give us the help we need, they pull in further away, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to assume that this is the Rams' trickiest period, and A, we need them to keep losing, and we always need to capitalize on their defeats. I can't shake the fact that, as with last year, I can see this season sort of petering out to a disappointing end. But whilst you're still in it, and whilst it's still only November, I mean, ultimately, the NFL season starts on Thanksgiving, let's be honest. I know there's 8 games before and 6 games after, or 10 games before and 6 games after, but the NFL season really kicks off in Thanksgiving, and that's when, you know, it really starts to get going. So the Seahawks have 6 games to save the season.
Yeah, it all starts on Sunday against the Niners. Quickly, though, before we go, quick lock or shock, locker and shock, lock or shock for week 12. I'll go because I'm pretty certain that you're just Googling the schedule, Adam. the lock of the week for me is the Eagles to beat the Bears. That was quite an impressive showing from the Eagles on Sunday. Like, they completely, like the Falcons did the week before, completely destroyed the Dallas offense and carved up the Dallas defense. It's a big game for Dallas tonight on Thanksgiving. But yeah, I think the lock of the week for me is the Eagles to beat the Bears.
I will go the Chiefs to get off the schneiz against the Bills.
Yeah, that loss against the Giants is strange. They had 4.5 yards of carry. Alex Smith was only sacked once, and they got 9 points against the Giants, who give up, was it 33 against the Niners a week earlier?
Yeah, I mean, pro tip with that, when you have a quarterback, generally better to get the quarterback to throw the ball than the tight end. Yeah. Pro tip Reid and the rest of the Chiefs.
Although asterisk, Travis Kelce may have a better arm.
He's got a hose.
He launched that thing. That was really, really impressive.
It was really cool to watch.
Yeah. Shock of the week for me. Shock of the week. I think I'm going to go for the Jets to just about do enough and surprise the Panthers. No matter how good the Panthers looked last time they played. I mean, on football against the Dolphins. Jets in the wind and rain at MetLife. I think they could just prove just to have enough. The Panthers are a strange team. They only get 40 or 10. And I think this could be a day where they get 10.
My shock of it will be the Seattle Seahawks. No. It will be the first game kicking off of the weekend, and one of the rare occasions when most of you listening to this will already know the result once it's come out, but I promise you it's 5:15 as it stands right now on Thursday. I'm going to go for the Lions to take care of business at home against the Vikings.
Yeah. Okay. You got true or false in there, or should we leave that for another week?
True or false, I've got to go and get to this tasting, otherwise I'm going to be very much fired from a job I'm doing. So that's true. That's 100% true. No need for the question or answer there.
Right, okay. So next week we'll be back talking about the Niners game, looking ahead to what is going to be a massive primetime game against the Philadelphia Eagles. If you want to get involved with the podcast, you can on all the usual social media devices and platforms. Twitter at Seahawkers UK. Facebook UK Seattle Seahawks fans. UKSeahawkers.com is our website. The positionpodcast.podbean.com. Also, our Patreon is also up there. we can find that. If you ask Ross, he probably knows where that is more than I do. But yeah, on Twitter, at @Stu_Core, at @AdamDNathan, at @RossBauer1984. All the guys making their way to Birmingham this Sunday, I will see you there as we have the third Midlands meet at the Atchison Bishop for the game. Until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast, and
go Hawks!
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.